Oral questions by members.
Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the details emerging in the sexual assault of an 11-year-old Kelowna girl by convicted pedophile Taylor Duick are nothing short of horrific. This NDP government apparently thought that not only was it a good idea to give this pedophile free horseback riding lessons, they decided to book those lessons at a riding camp that was easily identifiable as a venue for children. A representative of Community Living BC, a government agency, drove this monster there, dropped him off, and waited in the car in the parking lot while he assaulted an 11-year-old child. At no point did anyone in this NDP government apparently think of disclosing that the person attending this facility was a pedophile with a history of violent sexual assaults. The Premier needs to take accountability for this latest catastrophic failure of his government. So my question to the Premier is this: who is going to be fired for this utterly despicable failure to keep our children safe?
Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. This is completely outrageous. You know, you're a parent, you drop your kid off at a place they've been 100 times before. It would never cross your mind in a million years that there would be such a profound lack of judgment that somebody would put a repeat sexual offender, a pedophile, into that facility and sit in a car on the phone, not do the one job that was supposed to be done here. At every level, this was a massive failure of judgment. For CLBC to take on responsibility for someone with a criminal record like this, for them to subcontract that responsibility to an obviously negligent and incompetent subcontractor, for that person who had one job to do of make sure that this individual was not in contact with any children, to fail at that job, to decide that a horse barn was the right place to take this person, it is outrageous. I think about this family a lot, because it could happen to any family that they could do this. This is why it's so important there be an investigation to identify the individuals who exercise this profound lack of judgment, to hold them accountable and reassure families in British Columbia the government does not find this acceptable, that it is the absolute most unbelievable string of incompetent decision-making that one could even imagine, and that we will address it.
Leader of the Official Opposition, supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to move to another question, Mr. Speaker, but I would just say to the Premier that every time one of these horrific events happens, whether it's stabbings or, in this case, a sexual assault of a young child, we hear all the right words, we just don't see the action. Now, as I move on to housing, Mr. Speaker, I want to say that as the Premier's reckless spending fuels inflation and pushes housing costs ever higher, there has been a 62% surge in the number of people unable to pay their mortgages here in British Columbia. Yet, far from offering relief, this Premier keeps adding to the cost of housing and funneling taxpayer dollars into yet another BC housing boondoggle, like the condo project he falsely promised would provide affordable homes for middle-class families. What was the outcome? Well, an audit has now revealed that wealthy investors, some owning multiple homes worth millions of dollars, reaped the benefits. One realtor allegedly alone made $53,000 in commissions off of these so-called affordable units. So, question to the Premier, how many taxpayer dollars are going to be funneled to wealthy investors through the Premier's government-run housing scheme while more and more families fall behind in their mortgages?
Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. The member is referring to a Vivid attainable housing project. The member, it's odd, because it was set up under the BC Liberal government. The terms under which these properties were held was set up under their government. When I was housing minister, I was advised that the terms they had set up were inadequate, that people were taking advantage of the program. So I told BC Housing, go to court, hold these people accountable for what they're doing, and make sure that we fix the mistakes of the previous government on this. So I find it odd the member would stand up and talk about funneling money to investors when he and his party support removing the speculation and vacancy tax that only taxes you if you're holding homes vacant. He and his party have stood and voted against, again and again, restrictions on Airbnb. I look forward to see how they're going to vote on the flipping tax. They stand up for investors and speculators again and again, and unsurprisingly, the program that they set up was taken advantage of by, guess who? Speculators and investors.
Leader of the Official Opposition, second supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, as is so often the case, it's not an issue of who started a program, it's the issue of who's mismanaging the program throughout their time in government. And isn't it ironic that it is this premier, who was the minister responsible for BC Housing, and I remind the viewing audience, the minister that the audit came forward, the performance audit that came forward, that talked about a trail of a lack of paper trail for projects that were being undertaken, conflicts of interest. He had to fire the entire NDP-appointed board, had to get rid of the president that was also mismanaging the organization, an organization riven by mismanagement and financial profligacy, and no surprise, also mismanaging this program too. So good try, Premier, to try and suggest that someone else is responsible for your lack of oversight. The fact of the matter is he was housing minister responsible for that. Well, investors were getting rich off of this taxpayer scheme. Now, these wealthy investors, as we know, broke the rules. They were illegally renting out these taxpayer-funded units and using them as Airbnbs. Now, the Premier himself is no stranger from profiting from taxpayer-funded condos. He conveniently flipped his own condo as an Airbnb opportunity. It was marketed as an Airbnb opportunity, pocketing $150,000. And only personally profiting did he later turn around and financially devastate legally operating short-term rental providers like those that are here in the gallery today. My question to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, is how does the Premier justify enriching himself and other wealthy investors with taxpayer dollars at the expense of hardworking British Columbians who pay their taxes and play by the rules?
Premier.
Honourable Speaker, I know it's embarrassing for the member to stand up and ask a question and then suddenly realize, oh my God, that was our program that we started out. The member insists it's not about who spilled the milk, it's about who cleaned it up. I cleaned up mess after mess after mess. These guys at ICBC, BC Housing, and this was just one more example. Now, British Columbians know who's on the side of speculators and investors.
It's the party that is
literally running ads saying, we're going to get rid of the speculation and vacancy tax. We're going to get rid of the...
Member. Leader of the official opposition.
So we'll see how they vote on the flipping tax. But again and again and again, they stand up for people buying up strata units instead of them being available for families to run them as hotels. They stand up for people leaving homes vacant instead of renting them out as a place to live. They stand against people dividing their single-family home into units that are actually affordable for British Columbians. Again and again and again, they fight against British Columbians looking for housing in order to defend people like the Leader of the Opposition, the speculator-in-chief.
Member for West Vancouver Capilano.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the Premier never lets the truth get in the way of a good story. BC United has said that they will actually be supporting legislation that will help to regulate Airbnbs. We have said that and we supported that. What we have said is there are people here today in the gallery who are operating short-term rentals who are being unfairly targeted by this NDP's Bill 35. People like Suzanne, a senior from North Vancouver, we need the income to survive. I can't believe that after 50 years of hard work, you're doing this to us in our retirement. You should be ashamed. I understand going after people with multiple properties, but punishing us for one extra property, unbelievable, unquote. BC United has proposed common sense amendments to rectify the NDP's half-baked legislation, which this NDP government has dismissed and voted against. So will the Premier listen to common sense and protect these legally operating tourist accommodations in communities like Parksville and Vernon and right across the province?
Members, before I recognize the Government House Leader, I just remind people, be careful in your wording when we ask the question and answer. House Leader.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Honourable Speaker, there seems to be a theme emerging. Whenever we bring initiatives forward, first the BC United Caucus, they support the initiative. Then the BC Conservatives start talking about against it. The MLA for Parksville starts speaking against it. And then all of a sudden they realize, oh my gosh, there's an issue here that might be important for us. We might be able to get some votes, Honourable Speaker. Okay, this is the theme that's been over. So the member just said, we did support it. Oh, but until we heard from the other parties that this might not be a good idea, Honourable Speaker. There's no consistency in any position that they take. It changes all the time. It all depends, Honourable Speaker.
Members, one at a time, please.
It all depends on two things, what the BC Conservatives say, and then whoever's in the audience today, Honourable Speaker. Honourable Speaker, we have been consistent. We will continue to prioritize housing available for people in our communities. We know there's people struggling for housing. We are doing every single thing we can to ensure housing is available for people in our communities.
West Vancouver Capilano Supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That is gobbledygook from the Minister of Housing and does not satisfy the people who are being hurt by this. After 7 years of the NDP promising life would be more affordable, nothing could be further from the truth, as housing has never been less affordable. Instead of looking in the mirror, this Premier looks for scapegoats. He's even attacked people like Melissa, a Vancouver renter who depends on income from a single short-term rental property to support her family, who says, quote, these are her words, quote, I have two small children, 1 and 4 years old, and thinking about our family's future makes me angry. You've completely uprooted our financial health and portrayed us as the bad guys, end quote. When will the Premier stop blaming middle-class families like Melissa's and call our common sense private members' bill for debate?
Minister of Housing.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. The member said it's gobbledygook. It is not. They, in fact, supported...
Members.
Honourable Speaker, this is a consistent theme. They supported short-term rental legislation. The BC Conservatives came against it. Now they're against it. This is a theme. This is a theme, Honourable Speaker. Surrey Police. Surrey Police.
Members, it's okay to hear the answer. It's okay. Be quiet also.
Honourable Speaker,
please.
Similar with Surrey Police, similar with harm reduction, this is a theme we consistently see from the side. Honourable Speaker, people are struggling for housing in our community. We have communities with vacancy rates near 1%. Can't attract healthcare workers, can't attract teachers, can't attract the important services we need in our communities. We need to move more housing into the long-term market. I certainly hope that people will take the opportunity to provide long-term housing opportunities for people in our communities.
Leader of the Third Party.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. This week, the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis warned that, quote, Canadian LNG expansion does not make sense. Last month, U.S. President Joe Biden paused approvals for LNG export projects, citing a flooded market and climate concerns. Federal Minister Jonathan Wilkinson recently stated that LNG projects are risky investments. British Columbians are wary too. A new poll finds that public support for LNG is falling fast. Only 15% of British Columbians support this dirty fossil fuel industry. Despite all the red flags, this government continues to champion LNG exports. And since we're speaking of a lack of consistency today, my question is to the Premier, who 2 short years ago acknowledged that we can't keep adding fossil fuel infrastructure and expect to meet our climate targets. Will the Premier show leadership and pause any further approvals for LNG projects?
Minister of Energy and Mines.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. You know, we're in a very different position than in the United States. There are more than 170 LNG facilities operating in the U.S. compared to 8 projects here in Canada. In B.C., we have a new net zero industry policy that will require LNG facilities to be net zero by 2030 and any other new facility net zero by 2050. We also have a significant advantage in our transition to a clean energy economy, an economy we know we're moving towards and that this government firmly supports. We're going to be building a better future, a more robust, with more robust climate targets, and putting that emphasis on a clean energy transition, moving away from fossil fuels. Thank you.
Leader of Third Party Supplemental.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. I look forward to the future when historians will look back and recognize the term net zero is the most extraordinary kind of greenwashing. Doubling down on LNG means squandering BC's clean electricity, sending it at discounted rates to polluting fossil fuel projects rather than to the homes and businesses of British Columbians, who, as a result of this, can fully expect to see their hydro rates go up. Investing in LNG means tax cuts for dirty fossil fuel industry while more financial burden lands on British Columbians. The case in point is a $500 million tax cut for BC's largest industrial polluters hidden in this year's budget. The impact of climate change is all around us. 100 active fires are burning in the province right now. Snow levels are 40% below normal, and people are desperately concerned about the risks of wildfire and drought this summer. My question again is to the Premier. As the impacts of climate change become increasingly clear and costly, why is this government giving yet another tax break to the fossil fuel industry?
Minister of Energy and Mines.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, you know, I appreciate the member raising the issue of the LNG industry and the transition to the clean economy. But I'm disappointed to hear misinformation in her question. And I know that she understands that LNG pays or will pay the same hydro rate as other industry. Mr. Speaker, from record flooding and wildfires that we've seen, we know we need to take action, and we know that people and communities are on the front line of climate change. We're going to continue to tackle these changes with a reaffirmation of this commitment in Budget 2024. Mr. Speaker, $318 million to continue the grants and the rebates to help people make the switch to cleaner transportation, cleaner homes, healthier homes, building this transition to the lower carbon economy. Mr. Speaker, we're going to help British Columbians do exactly what they want to do, what they're asking us all to do, and we're going to do it with them. Thank you.
Leader of the Fourth Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This NDP government is systematically destroying our forest sector. In my riding alone, BC timber sales, it's been almost 3 years, and permits have not been issued on close to 2 million, between 1.5 and 2 million cubic meters of wood. This has led to a closure, so contributed to the closure in Fraser Lake. It's led to the curtailment in Vanderhoof. In Merritt, it's been almost 2 years now, and hardly any permits have gotten out the door. These are all permits for wood that has been damaged by wildfires, that's dying, that needs to be cut, that needs to be reforested. So, Mr. Speaker, when a community loses a mill, it's not just the workers that lose their pay, but being able to support the families, but it guts the community. And it leads, unfortunately, to poverty, alcoholism, crime, violence, and despair. decent, hardworking British Columbians struggling and suffering, and they're losing their ability to pay their families. Workers, they just want to get to work. Question to the Premier, why is this government actively trying to destroy the forest sector, and why are they putting union and non-union jobs on the line?
Minister of Forests.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Forest curtailments are extremely difficult for workers and for communities. People in communities are facing low lumber prices and less available timber after the beetle kill and forest fires. A member opposite will recall that he chaired a committee that investigated the coming timber supply challenges in his region in 2012. Had his government followed the recommendations in that report, we'd be in a very different position, perhaps. But nonetheless, Fraser Lake, the closure of the mill there, the Ministry of Jobs has sent in their crisis response team, and they are working with the community. In addition, we have also the Premier in his speech at Prince George to the Natural Resources Forum has identified fiber supply as a major challenge for the forest sector, and indeed appointed a new minister, the Minister of Sustainable Forest Resources, to investigate, with his sole mission to increase available fiber to mills and to communities.
Leader of the Fourth Party, supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In 3 years without issuing permits on almost 2 million cubic meters of wood from BC timber sales, that is strictly on this government. And Jeff Bromley from the United Steelworkers Wood Council says, and I quote, "Thousands of high-paying rural community supporting jobs are disappearing right before our eyes. It's time for our province to decide if it wants to have a vibrant forest sector that supports good-paying jobs, Indigenous people, and local economies," end quote. Mr. Speaker, the United Steelworkers couldn't be more clear. BC workers just want jobs. They want the dignity of being able to have a decent job and being able to support their families. And quite frankly, all we're seeing from this government is pro-drugs, pro-crime, anti-family, anti-worker. They're selling out the people of this province, quite frankly, in a vain attempt to get green votes in the Lower Mainland. Mr. Speaker, forestry is the backbone of British Columbia. It used to be the backbone, but it still is the backbone in many, many communities across this province. So the question to the Premier is, why is this government so indifferent to the everyday hardworking people who just want to make a living and provide for their families?
Minister of Forests.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I agree with the member that the forest industry is the backbone of the economy of this province now, and it will be in the future. We wouldn't have the standard of living that we have in this province without the forest resources, the jobs, and the prosperity that it creates. Indeed, the forest products remain one of British Columbia's largest commodity exports, generating over $15.5 billion in exports in 2022, about 25% of total commodity exports. It's the only natural resource that, if managed well, can offer solutions in a climate-challenged world. So I agree with the member. I agree with Jeff Bromley that forestry is an important part of the future of the economy of British Columbia.
Member for Prince George, Whalemount.
This week, the Minister of Citizen Services defended the NDP's $10 FOI application fee. With a straight face, he said, and I quote, "We are doing what we can, making sure the system works for people," end quote. Well, clearly, people must refer exclusively to the Premier and the NDP cabinet. The NDP have earned the title of Canada's most secretive government, and the Premier's office now boasts record-breaking FOI request delays, with responses taking over a year. So maybe the minister could enlighten us on how charging a $10 fee for the privilege of waiting over a year is doing what we can.
Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. The member raised FOI responses from the Premier's office. I can advise the member that we have eliminated the backlog of 117 files down to one, and we're responding to requests at 98% on time this year. We'll keep working. 100% is what's expected. But I can advise the member that since they've not been in power, we've also discontinued the use of post-it notes.
Member for Kamloops North Thompson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. No $10 daycare, but certainly $10 FOI fees by this government that continues to justify its title as the most secretive government in Canada. Maybe they're going to average FOI fees moving forward, Mr. Speaker. We've been asking repeatedly to know the true cost of FIFA because British Columbians actually deserve to know. The tourism minister won't give a number or say what the requirements are. In fact, the only thing clear is that the NDP has given FIFA a blank check. Seattle, in stark contrast, has actually published its FIFA contract. So a very straightforward question. What is the number, what is the dollar figure for FIFA today as things stand?
Minister of Tourism, Arts and Culture.
To the opposition for the question. I'm really happy to stand up and talk about FIFA. It's going to be the greatest celebration this province has ever seen. We got some great news a couple weeks ago. We're moving from 5 games to 7 matches, which is a really great piece of news for the amount of visitors we're going to have to see our province.
Members,
we are looking forward to releasing the numbers on FIFA. We've had some new information. We're working on that. We want to release sound numbers when we do. It's coming in the next few weeks. I know they're going to be very excited to receive those numbers. What we know, Mr. Speaker, is that this brings a huge opportunity to our province. And we expect British Columbia to be in a better place after FIFA leaves.
House Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Well, it seems these days that NDP stands for the No Dancing Party. The Premier's NDP government has penalized Lula's Taverna on Commercial Drive with a $10,000 fine or a one-week liquor license suspension for the crime of people dancing in a Greek restaurant. And Trocador on Main Street was shut down for the horrible crime of people dancing on New Year's Eve. This is under the same premier who orchestrated a prohibition-style raid of Fett's Whiskey Kitchen in his first days as Attorney General, forcing them to close. So my question to the premier is this. Can the premier explain how the heck it makes sense for his NDP government to allow people to smoke meth, snort cocaine, shoot up with heroin in a restaurant, but God forbid if there's dancing in that same restaurant, the NDP is going to hit you with fines and suspensions.
Here, here.
Minister of Public Safety.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I appreciate the question from the member. But I have to say he's being a little footloose with some of the facts, Honourable Speaker. And of course, that doesn't surprise me, Honourable Speaker, when you have an opposition that clearly is on its last tango in this House in terms of being the opposition, Honourable Speaker. Because time and time again, they seem to be more in tune with dancing to the two-stepping duo of the BC Conservative Party, Honourable Speaker. What I want to tell the Honourable Member is that I'm sure that he is aware that he knows that there are two kinds of licenses in this province. One is a liquor primary license, the other is a food primary license. He will also know, Honourable Speaker, that one of the cases that he refers to, it was not shut down because of dancing, Honourable Speaker, but in fact because it was over capacity. That is something fire officials take seriously and liquor inspectors take seriously, Honourable Speaker. And I mention this because these rules are the same rules that were in place when that government sat on this side of the House, Honourable Speaker. Now, Honourable Speaker, I also know, Honourable Speaker, that when it comes to liquor laws, there have been changes, and we have been making those changes, Honourable Speaker. We have worked with the industry to put in terraces, the tesses, which they
Thank
have
you.
Wanted. We've been assisting the industry, ensuring their license is holding value for up to 10 years, and we will continue to do more, including the issue of dancing, Honourable Speaker, because at the end of the day, if people want to dance, they should be able to dance.
Member for Surrey White Rock.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And based on that answer, it shows how seriously this government actually takes to the devastating consequences we are seeing to small business in BC today.
Hear, hear.
But let's talk about something else. Let's talk about $10 a day daycare. The Premier has broken a promise time and time again, and he deflects, opting to discuss averages instead. In not one but two elections, the signature promise of this NDP government was universal $10 a day daycare. Not average, not winners and losers, universal $10 a day daycare. And what have they done? Well, we see over 10,000 fewer young children are in a child care since 2019. Parents are now facing a lottery and a nightmare trying to get a spot. Parents grappling with the cost of living crises deserve a straight answer. When will this premier actually fulfill the NDP's promise, 7-year, two-election, broken promise of universal $10 per child daycare?
Premier.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. In our province, the parents of more than 13,000 children are already receiving $10 a day spaces. There are 35,000 children and their families receiving the affordable child care benefit. They're paying $10 a day. Now, the thing, though, that grates me a little bit about these questions is that the members pretend they care about or actually want $10 a day child care for British Columbians. Because in the 2017 campaign, they were actually asked about this. The member for Abbotsford West was asked if federal funding for child care would change his position on $10 a day, opposing it. What was his answer to that? No. Still opposed. But what happened when the leader of the BCUP was in cabinet? There was a $14 a day child care plan. And what did he do? He canceled it. And so if he ever gets on this side of the House, we know what he's going to do, Honourable Speaker. We know what he's going to do. He's going to every single family that's benefiting from reduced child care rates
Members. Premier has the floor.
If they ever get on this side of the House, Honourable Speaker, they'll do the same thing they did last time, is they will cancel affordability for BC families just like they did last time.
The bell and the question period.